is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two, Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. We welcome you back to our downtown Las Vegas Circus Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here. Really fun first hour of the show. We cannot thank enough John McClain, longtime Houston Texans beat reporter, and Brad Biggs, longtime Bears beat reporter, each for joining us. Those two, no BS with them. They tell it like it is. Great to have them on. Previewing those two teams today, since that is how our preseason kicks off tomorrow with the Hall of Fame game. We'll also have Adam Burke coming up in a half hour in studio, who is the really the godfather of the college football betting guide. We will have Adam breaking down all the different insights there. Thought what Brad had to say, though, Michael, super insightful on a Bears team that is getting a lot of hype. A lot of the potential red flags are being ignored, and D-line a very good part of that, too, where outside of Montez Sweat, who was a great midseason acquisition, outside of a T.J. Edwards at 13 quarterback pressures as a blitzer last year, who can you really rely on comfortably going into 2024? It's a question well worth examining, and I'm glad Brad went so in-depth on that.
You know, this goes back to my days with Coach Walsh. You want to have somebody who can rush the passer and close games out in the fourth quarter. And I obviously Sweat got six sacks for him. But, you know, Sweat's a good player. They gave up a second round pick for him. They could have signed him, which what they paid him in free agency. They didn't have to do that. So for me, you know, I was just like, OK, what are they going to do here? And I think they've got to figure it out, because everything that they do with the offense, with their defense, is predicated on the front, you know? And so if they don't have a good front seven, it's damn hard to do it. And I think that's going to be the real problem. I think they've got to find a way to generate some pass rush. And is this defensive front good enough? I believe that if you're Matt Eberflus, you know everything is predicated on that. And I think he's got to be a little nervous about it.
There's a lot of question marks, too. That's why we will have Michael's top burning questions for the Bears coming up in our second segment. I have Chicago much closer. The gap between Chicago and Minnesota, Michael, way closer than the gap between Chicago and Detroit and Green Bay at the top of the division. If we're Minnesota to have a league average quarterback, Kirk Cousins was still there in Minnesota, I'd have Chicago team number four in this division heading into 2024. That's just the reality when you break down the positions. And that's where the NFC North is so fascinating, because of two really, really high expectation teams in the Lions and Packers, and then a lot of hype in on that third team there in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago, we know the Bear fans bet, and we know their numbers go way up and all that. We've seen it time and time again. But for me, I think it's got to be Minnesota. Why is Chicago better than Minnesota? I don't understand it. I really don't. I think, to me, Minnesota, the way they played and the way they play defense, I think it's going to be. Now, Darnold's going to have to not turn the ball over. That's going to be critical. But I think clearly that Minnesota is at least, should be even with them, right? They should be right there.
It's funny you say that. If it was a game on a neutral field, I'd have it a pick 'em. And that's not how the market is. I mean, it's higher on Chicago. But, I'm not sold, at least yet, on the Chicago Bears. A lot of questions we'll get into. They are going to be featured on Hard Knocks as well, which starts at the first episode coming out next week here, Michael. So I know on the heels of the Giants offseason Hard Knocks, you're ready to rock right into another team here.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm looking forward to see how much the Bears access they give us, right? I don't know how much they're going to give us. The Giants gave us tremendous access. And you got to wonder why they did that. I mean, last night, they showed us their draft board with the players they had ranked and the players that they didn't want to talk about and all that stuff. So for me, it was kind of interesting how all this came about. I don't know really why you would do that, but they did anyway.
Hey, we appreciate it as viewers. It was based especially on the, the sort of, I wouldn't say, necessarily it was sort of the sterile format of Hard Knocks for the training camp, but we have gotten so used to a very specific way they do it. It was cool to see a different way of presenting it, especially going into the draft there, as the Giants one wrapped up last night. I know our producer, Elliot Bowman, he was looking his chops watching how the Colts made a big offer to move up to six. Giants didn't really budge. It was apparently picks 15, 46 at a next year second round pick to move up to six, which, hey, could have made a lot of difference as far as how the first round went, even though how do you think the Colts would have ended up taking that six pick? Because there's obviously a lot of, we'll never know exactly, but they end up getting their defensive guy they ended up wanting to a little bit later, despite not moving up.
Well, I mean, considering they did nothing defensively, I mean, everybody probably thinks it was going to be to take a receiver because that's usually what everybody wants to think. But, I mean, I think they were locked in on defense, and I know they wanted another rusher. Now, I don't know if they thought they had to go up to six to get Latua, you know. And, you know, I think so. Maybe it could have been a wide receiver. But for me, you know, they sat back and got the best defensive player off the board. And as we've talked about with Mike Chappelle the other day, he's having a hell of a camp, which is what they need. I mean, look, let's face it. The Bears needed another pass rusher or a left tackle, and they chose to take a receiver. They're not going to not – I mean, if the quarterback plays well, they're not going to be receiver down. What's going to hurt them more than anything is can they block?
And also on the Giants front, who do take Malik Nabers, it's how it all played out. You know, it's not like we're spoiling anything. What happened at Hard Knocks? It was the last episode, the recap of the draft there for the Giants. It goes into how much does Nabers move the needle on a team that has so many holes and needs on their offense and their defense. I still have the Giants a bottom five wide receiver room, even with bringing in a guy as electric and as exciting as a Malik Nabers.
Yeah, look, one thing about, again, this goes back to my education as an executive from Bill Walsh, is the last position you fix on your team is wide receiver. I mean, it shocked me watching that show last year about how unaware the Giants team is. They had Darren Waller as a team captain. Like, he represents nothing that a captain should be. He's not, you know, yes, he's tremendous athletically, but he doesn't really do the things necessary to be a captain. And then they trade a third round pick for him and he's gone. Like, what are they doing? Like, they've had their quarterbacking situation is problematic. They can hide underneath the carpet all they want and they can bury themselves in the shade, but I don't care what receivers you get, they get them the ball. And look, here's the reality. The Nabers is going to get doubled.
Because who else are you really worried about? Yeah, I'm completely with you. Also, how many routes will he be running where he looks back for the ball and whoever is the quarterback is being smothered because the offensive line is still a mess? I mean, there's so many layers you can get into with the Giants. I look at it as outside of the front seven, what is there to really get excited about? Front seven is really the only top half of the league positional group I see the Giants being close to having this year.
Well, look, they're good. Whether Burns can make a difference, I mean, we'll see. But obviously with Thibodeau, Burns, inside with Lawrence and whomever else they put next to Lawrence, they should be. But they have no team speed on defense. This is going to be a zone team, right? This is going to be a zone team that's going to spot drop. I mean, that's the way they're going to play. They're going to get an eighth man in the front. They're going to try to stop the run. But I don't see this as they're going to try to milk you down the field, make you earn it, not give up big plays. You know, they spent all these resources on corners. If you're going to play cover two, you don't need elite corners. You're going to have to play man-to-man. So I think the Giants have always been one of the year they won the Super Bowl, it was because of their line. Their line could protect. Their defensive line could rush. The reason they beat the undefeated team in football was only because they couldn't block them. And this front is, you know, whether Burns can stay healthy for 17 games, I don't know. Whether Thibodeau can they play from in front? And then their running back situation with Singletary, he gained 300 yards after contact. With this offensive line, you're going to have to gain yards after contact.
Sure thing. It leads right into what is on Michael's mind for this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. And it also ties in a team we've been talking about a lot today, the Chicago Bears, with the extension to DJ Moore and how it relates to, you think about front offices and in polar opposite modes as part of a spending spree. One team has it, the other does not, if we're comparing the Bears and the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I don't understand about the Bears is the Giants sit there and say, we can't have a $40 million quarterback and a $12.5 million running back. Meanwhile, the Bears are over here signing wide receivers, the third receiver. You know, they got backup tight ends in Everett. They're spending all this money. Cole Kmet, they signed to an extension. Keenan Allen, they gave an extension. I mean, they've got over $50 million in wide receivers. They have a quarterback on a rookie contract. It doesn't matter where you put the money. And meanwhile, the Giants have 12. They paid $5 million. So for another $7 million, you could have had Saquon Barkley. Like, okay. To me, where I think the Giants made the biggest mistake is the fact that they didn't take look at options if they signed. It didn't sign Burns and spread his money around. But to lose Barkley when you have no playmakers on your team, if you had Barkley and Nabers now you got somewhere. But that line is still problematic. I mean, they talk about how they rebuilt the line. you and I both know Illuminor, now they moved him to right tackle, which is where he's going to play. Today came out in the paper. They came out in the paper that, you know, maybe Neal's not going to be ready, which he probably won't be. So Illuminor would beat out Neal anyway at right tackle. Now, where are they at guard? They had to sign Van Noy from the Raiders last year. You know, you're now you're down to where it's going to be a problem.
There's a lot of different ways, too, you can attack betting the Jets. I have them roster number 32, Michael, even though most people would tell you, oh, Patriots are just in a terrible spot. And granted, there's not much to like about New England, but I still see this as being a tougher year for the Giants based on the lack of speed on defense. Like you alluded to, how the only positional group they can really rely on will have to, you know, on the defensive line has to weigh so much on their shoulders to try to prop up an offense that just won't give them anything. It'll be something we talk about on Why Not Wednesday. But there's some long shot bets you can make. As much as that Giants under has been hammered already, there's probably not much value there. I still don't know that it's being properly baked into the market because I don't see much to like about this Giants team. A team 32 for me starting 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, you know, McFadden trying to play cover two with short arms, no speed. I mean, I don't know where that all comes into. I think to me they have really no depth in the defensive front. I mean, they're still talking about Boogie Basham like he's going to be some kind of good player. Look, I think the Giants are going to struggle, and that's just, you know, I think Washington has more talent than they do. I think when you watch the show, it's pretty clear they overly evaluate their own players. I think that's pretty clear. Look, I think the Bears do too. I think the Bears, if you're going to play in Chicago, you better be physical up front and run the ball.
Yes, you must. We'll talk more NFL in a little bit. But up next, Adam Burke in studio talking college football betting guide.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out tomorrow. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, the preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both the College Football and NFL Betting Guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily Pro Picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe. Pick the plan that works best for you. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. I saw Adam Burke, Michael. I got so excited, and I realized he's not coming on with us for another 15 minutes. That's just how excited I am to talk college football. And tune in tomorrow as well. An hour before our show gets underway, Michael, we'll have the full college football betting release special. I'll have that with Adam right before Lombardi Line hits the air tomorrow. So excited for that, as we still have some burning questions to get through. Before we do that, though, you made the comment earlier, Dallas Cowboys, not a lot of buzz right now. Like, where are the fans at training camp? And Femi can't account for everybody in the stands. Well, if he goes there to Oxford, here was from Michael Esley. I don't know. I think he should. He should make a last stand out there, Femi.
Is he going this week? Oh, he's going. Well, of course, he's probably got a consultation with Jerry. They got to go over a few things. I'm sure Femi's got to get a couple things off his chest, you know, and he and Jerry will have a sit down to go over it. But
a fireside chat, so to speak.
Yeah, I just don't see a lot of enthusiasm. I mean, let's face it, the media has done such a good job of convincing the fans that Mike McCarthy's not a good coach, right? And even though if you were to say who's a better offensive coach, let's play this game for a second. Yeah. Who's a better offensive coach, Mike McCarthy or Kellen Moore? Most everybody would give it to Kellen Moore.
Right.
Most everybody would, correct, Ben?
Yeah, it's 100%.
Okay. Who had a better year with Mike McCarthy calling plays or Kellen Moore?
We can definitively say yes.
I mean, the analytical community hates Mike McCarthy. They love Kellen Moore, but they're in the numbers business, and they refuse to look at the numbers of what Prescott did with McCarthy compared to what he did with Kellen Moore. It's almost... Well, it isn't like almost, it is. It's almost like whatever the media wants to feed you is what you have to digest. It's unfair to McCarthy because McCarthy has done a really good job of cleaning up Dak. And what they did last year was really historic in terms of how they built the lead and how they were able to play from in front and how they moved the football. It was really, and how he called the game. But he gets no respect at all. Mike gets no. The guy's won a Super Bowl. He's won 60% of his games as a head coach. He's not had a losing record in Dallas, and yet people think he's Dave Campo, and including the owner, who won't even extend his contract.
It's a situation where Dak Prescott, second last year, completion percentage over expectation, combined with EPA per play. He was, you know, he was around ninth previous 2 years when you go back to the Kellen Moore run. There was clear improvement there. And it's why, I mean, I found myself, yeah, because for us as bettors, right, we're always, you know, there's always a number, right, where it becomes a buy point to, you know, to the low. There's always a number where it becomes a sell point to the high as far as expectation. Yeah, the more people want to sleep on Dallas, that picture for Mike Leslie, who covers the team, where there's basically nobody out there at Oxnard talking about how low the attendance is at camp. Yeah, I mean, it's still a team that I pencil in as a safe bet to make the postseason. Like, we're kind of talking about them like the sky's falling, yet they're going to be in the mix, you know, come January. And, you know, Mike McCarthy is, yeah, as much as he has been maligned for, you know, a lot of the little things, he's still been able to get his team, you know, there in the regular season. It's just we always remember what we last saw. And what we last saw was the Cowboys getting completely blown out of the water by Green Bay, who was red hot and came in at the perfect time to face him last year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not saying Mike's perfect, right? I'm certainly not saying that. But what I'm saying, I'm comparing an apple to an apple. The guy coaching offense versus the who called the plays 2 years ago, who called the plays last year. And obviously, if, you know, this team has not succeeded, I mean, let's face it, they've not been able to win tough games come playoff times. You know, they've lost two home playoff games when they had the advantage. I mean, to let Green Bay go in there, I thought Mike panicked. I thought the game slipped away. I think they overachieved last year. Most people think they underachieved. I don't. I think they overachieved. I don't see him as being nearly as good. Lawrence isn't nearly as good a defensive player as he once was. And Parsons is still great, but you know, Parsons can't do it all by himself. The rookie defensive lineman had 13 pressures. That's the second most on the team. Parsons had 33. They played from in front in almost every single game. And yet they couldn't stop the run at all. And the teams that played against them that kept the game close on the road specifically ran the football on them other than Miami. So, like, this is going to be an interesting. If he gets off to a bad start, the heat's going to be on Jerry to make a move because Jerry's put that pressure on him. Jerry could have given McCarthy a phony extension and taken some of this heat off, right? He could have given him option years. It's my option. And nobody would have known it other than Jerry and Mike McCarthy, right?
Sure thing. Well, that's why Dallas. I mean, it's such a, you know, a uniquely built franchise from a perception expectation standpoint because of the way the media treats him. To your point, I had Dallas going into last year. I was high on Dallas. I had him a top 10 power rated team. My regular season numbers, I had Dallas up to number 3 before they completely fell apart. So they clearly, the numbers were better than what the expectations were. And those were even on the lofty side of things for Dallas. So to now expect them to just completely take a crash and burn, you know, week 1 to week 17 look this year, I definitely believe is way putting cart before the horse.
But I think we as bettors have to be really aware of this, though, Ben, is because of the uncertainty, because of the lack of protection by the owner, the noise from the outside could disrupt the inside. And I think that could be the case. There's no enthusiasm for the team. And if they start slow, the players are basically saying, we're playing for a substitute teacher. This guy's not going to be here next year. And that stuff manifests itself, right? I've lived through this with Bill Callahan. Okay, we went to the Super Bowl in 2002. Bill Callahan had signed, that was his first year as a head coach. He signed a 4-year contract with the Raiders. 2 years were guaranteed. The next 2 years were not guaranteed. They were options. We went to the Super Bowl. Now, most owners in the league would have picked up the next 2 years of Bill Callahan's contract because of going to the Super Bowl. That would have been his reward, not Al Davis. He didn't. So Bill became a lame duck coach. And when the year got bad, all of a sudden the players just said, no, we're done. This guy's not going to be here next year. I think that has the potential in Dallas to be a real issue. I really do.
Yeah, 100%. And it's it's part of the question mark on the Cowboys year in, year out, is the stability or lack thereof coming at head coach. As we, you know, and as we kind of wrap up too, we were talking Bears earlier today, another team in the NFC, while it's in a completely different ballpark. One of the, you know, we've talked most of your burning questions already on Chicago. The one we didn't get to, and I think it's a nice transition into this year, Michael, is what are we expecting out of Matt Eberflus? Who is he? Because as much as you talk about a Mike McCarthy who's at least proven himself, yet there's clearly not the same confidence from the front office. Well, Bears have all the confidence in the world in Matt Eberflus, but the reality is, you know, the guy so far is 10-24 as a head coach. And while there's a lot of hype, a lot of expectation here, I know that's something that you wanted to dive in on too, as far as, you know, what sort of guy is this as a leader trying to get this team over the hump now and back to the postseason?
I mean, look, the Bears have won 32 games and lost 51 over the last 5 years. They're a 38% win percentage. They're no different than the Giants. The Giants are at 36 since Tom Coughlin left the building, right? This team hasn't won. And I really believe this. You do not go from bad to great. Now, Houston did last year. Okay, Houston did. But I think the South is a little different than the NFC North, right? I do think that Detroit's a good team. It took Detroit a year of getting good before they made the playoffs. I think Green Bay is a good young team, right? I think Minnesota, as you indicated, is a lot closer to Chicago, and the way they play defense is a problem. So, like, I just don't see this as the lights come on for Eberflus. He's 10-24 as a head coach. Now, I give him a ton of credit here. Last year with Alan Williams and that whole fiasco with his defensive coordinator happened, and he had to take over the play calling where they came into the building. I mean, he managed some really difficult situations and got the team through it. But again, you know, what's going to happen this year? I mean, they fire Luke Getsy. They bring Shane Waldron in. What happens if they start slow offensively? It's not going to be Caleb Williams' fault. I can promise you that.
Yeah, no doubt. And it also goes into the dichotomy between so many teams when they protect the ball versus when they don't. It was very stark, the contrast for the Bears last year. What do you think of when you say the words rookie followed by quarterback? You think lots of turnovers just in general. I don't care who you are, how good you end up being. That's a big thing to watch for the Bears as well coming into this year.
Yeah, no question. And you know, and look, the quarterback's going to make his mistakes. He's loose with the ball in the pocket. We know that, you know, and he's going to learn. It's going to take some time, and they're going to want to throw the football. You know, one thing about having a young quarterback and you have veteran receivers who expect the football, they're going to want the ball.
Bears 1-8 last year when they turned the ball over 2+ times, 5-1 when they avoided turnovers. I mean, if you're handicapping, you kind of set the line every game with a rookie quarterback, especially with an uncertain offensive line at about one and a half. That's just the reality. I mean, in today's day and age of young quarterbacks entering the league, a lot of really good questions there. We've talked on both the Bears and the Texans for today. That's the Hall of Fame game for tomorrow. When we come back, we'll talk all sorts of college football as our Adam Burke is in studio, ready to go, breaking down the college football betting guide set to be released tomorrow.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line into our final half hour with Michael. I'm Ben in for Stormy, and what a treat we have here. Look who's here, Michael. It's Adam Burke, college football betting guide set to come out tomorrow. Adam, our senior managing editor at VSiN.com. Or is that, do I always mix it up? Is that the correct
Managing editor, senior, whatever you want to call me.
I like senior.
Whatever you want to call me. I feel like I've been called editor. Much worse, so whatever you want to call me is fine by me.
Man of many talents, Adam Burke. You and I are going to host the College Football Betting Guide release special tomorrow. We're so excited, Michael. We're just going to stay up all night. We're going to record in these same exact suits tomorrow morning. I'm really excited for it. Guide is out, and you're kind of comparing the two here, Adam. I mean, look, NFL Guide, like we know it's 32 teams. It's a deep dive into each one. There's a lot of really good actionable info. College, though, when it comes to actually preparing for a season, I mean, the prep you have to do is just out of this world compared to the NFL. As much as we're an NFL show here, I mean, college, it's like night and day, right, as far as your prep goes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about the NFL, and you guys know this as well as anybody, like anytime a free agent gets signed, there's some kind of headline somewhere, right? Whether it's on the team website, whether it's big enough to get, you know, national media coverage, stuff like that. That's not the case with college football. Certainly when you get a big-time high-profile transfer, that's something that's going to get some run, get some headlines, stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of times a lot of offensive line upgrades, defensive line upgrades, secondary upgrades, stuff like that. Those aren't things that are going to get headlines. Those aren't things that people are going to be aware of and know about. So that's one of the primary functions of this guide. We preview all 134 FBS teams, Kennesaw State being the new one this year, and we talk about some transfer portal additions. We talk about returning production. We talk about all the coaching and coordinator changes as well. And the nice thing I think about our guide is we don't have to keep lines of communication open with coaches or SIDs or athletic departments. We can give honest, unbiased assessments of these teams from a betting-focused standpoint, and I think that is one of the most valuable elements of our guide, which, again, comes out tomorrow for VSiN Pro subscribers at VSiN.com.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're so right. It's so hard to – and I've been going through the Southeast Conference every morning with a bunch of friends around the league, and we've been – you know, and sometimes, like today, we got to – you know, we got to one of the schools, Auburn, and one of the guys is not there, but he is somewhere else, and who transfers in and who doesn't. The guide kind of helps you handle all that stuff and then look at the quarterbacks. I want to ask you, I made this statement earlier in the show, Adam. I think Milroe is better than people are giving him credit for right now. I think Milroe, with understanding the DeBoer offense, could be really good.
Yeah, first of all, I really like Kalen DeBoer. I think Kalen DeBoer is a top five head coach in college football. And when you look at what he's done with quarterbacks throughout his career, and even if you go all the way back to when he was the offensive coordinator at Eastern Michigan in the mid-2010s, Brogan Roback became a really, really good quarterback for the Eagles. He's the second leading passer all time in that program. That was Kalen DeBoer. And then, of course, Michael Penix at two different stops, both Indiana and Washington, turns him into a top half of the first round draft pick. And of course, a guy who played really, really well for the Huskies, took them, you know, all the way to the national championship game. And that's just something that Kalen DeBoer does with his quarterbacks. And now he's got the most talented quarterback he's ever had in Jalen Milroe. So I think that Alabama's in a really, really good spot. Also, I love their defensive coordinator, Kane Womack. Although I think it's a little bit crazy, Ben, I don't know if you saw this on social media today. Alabama at practice, of course, it's hot and humid in Alabama.
I've heard.
Kane Womack running around in a hoodie. So, jeez. A complete football guy, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I think Alabama is going to be really, really good this season. And, you know, they're a team that I'm entertaining thoughts of taking them at 14 or 15 to 1 to win it all this year.
And if you are thinking of that very thought, Adam, you're probably interested too, as Michael pointed out, Jalen Milroe to win the Heisman in that same 15 to 1 range, as Adam Burke is with us here in studio at Skating Tripods. Part of the big reason why the College Football Guide is out now, a huge reason.
Tomorrow.
Out tomorrow. Basically, yeah. We might have gotten a sneak
peek. We have a proof,
peek.
And I will tell you, it is 212 pages long.
That's a lot.
So there's a lot of editing to do here. Again, 134 FBS teams, team per page, kind of adds up a little bit. There's a lot of editing going on here behind the scenes, but we will be ready to have that guide out to you first thing tomorrow morning. So we're very, very excited about that.
There we go. It's a busy time for Adam.
It is a busy time.
Writing about baseball every single day and then doing this guide. So Adam wrote the and we have every single conference, breakdowns team by team, AAC for Adam, ACC, the Sun Belt, as well as an article, which is a really actionable article, Michael, something you do. It's how to make your own power ratings model, and then the 2024 home field advantage values, which it is not just a flat 1.5 or 2 like the NFL we usually do, but there are a lot of variances that go on in that. One of the conferences, we talk ACC here, and what I like about the ACC is really, Florida State is viewed as the consensus number one, but after that, I mean, you could make a case for 4 or 5 different teams to knock right there on the door, be in that ACC title game. North Carolina, a team you've got your eye on that you are looking to attack kind of in an alt-win market way. Even though they lose Drake May at quarterback, the consensus is, all right, they've lost a lot now, especially you think about May being gone. What will the cupboard actually look like there on offense? But give us an idea inside that locker room there in Chapel Hill with what the Tar Heels still have there.
Yeah, so I think attacking alternate win total markets, both in the NFL and college football, can be really profitable. A lot of things can go right. A lot of things can go wrong. It's not an exact science for the sports books pricing these things. I mean, you can kind of assume, a team's going to be favored in X number of games and then kind of build off of that. But I actually have the Tar Heels favored in 10 games this season. And one of their underdog roles for me, the rivalry game against NC State coming up at the end of the year, they're only a half-point dog in that game for me. So, I think that this North Carolina team, yeah, they lose Drake May, but they bring in a very, very experienced college quarterback in Max Johnson, who's been at both Texas A&M and LSU. They had a 1,500-yard rusher last year in Omarion Hampton. He's going to be back this season as well. The seat is hot for Mack Brown. I will readily admit that. But again, something that we kind of focus on in our guide here that, you maybe won't find as much in other places, North Carolina brought in Jeff Collins to be the defensive coordinator, a guy who had a lot of success at Mississippi State, also at Florida. As a head coach, the results were mixed at Temple and Georgia Tech, but he's a very, very well-established defensive coordinator, and talent has never been a question in Chapel Hill. So I like their alt win total over 8.5 at plus 180. Obviously, I like over 7.5 at minus 115 as well. And I think that North Carolina is a team that could make some noise in this conference. I think a lot of people are kind of coronating Florida State already as the champion. I don't know that that's going to be the case. I'm not totally sold on DJU. I don't like what's going on at Clemson at all. I think Miami is a really good team, but as you go through the top teams, the top contenders in this conference, I think there are a lot of weaknesses, and I think North Carolina is a team that has an underappreciated ceiling right now in the betting markets, and I may look to take them 30-1 here to win the ACC.
And let me ask you, as you've gone through this guide and spent a lot of time going over all these teams, is there a team that you weren't high on that after going through it, you said, wait a minute, this team's good? Like, for me, it's Kentucky. Like, I've gone through the Southeast Conference. Kentucky's looks a lot better than some of the other teams, Florida being an example, certainly Mississippi State. What team that kind of jumped out to you?
Well, I will say North Carolina is certainly one of them. I mean, I didn't really expect to be that high in the Tar Heels, especially for the reason Ben mentioned. I mean, you lose a top five draft pick in Drake May, and you think, okay, well, how are they going to replace that? Well, they use some NIL money to replace that, and that's something I think is a really big positive here for a lot of these programs that are willing to do that, willing to go outside the program. Clemson, I'm talking to you. As far as some other teams that, you know, I wasn't all that high on that I kind of got high on, East Carolina is a team, and as Ben mentioned, I wrote the AAC, ACC, and the Sun Belt. East Carolina, a team out of the AAC, you know, this is typically a program that historically has been really, really good on offense. They've turned some guys into some NFL players. I think Keaton Mitchell, the running back who was drafted a couple years ago, still has a chance to be a pretty good NFL player. But this is a team that, you know, last year just didn't have it, any help at the quarterback position. They were actually a top 50 defense in a lot of different metrics, but they just didn't have the guy at the most important position on the field. They got a couple of Power 5 transfers this year that I think those two guys will kind of fight for reps, fight for the job. The running game should be much better this season. And Mike Houston is a good head coach. He's a guy who, again, the seat is a little bit hot for him based on underperforming last season, but he's been a good head coach at every stop he's been at. He was pretty good over his first few seasons here with East Carolina. I think the Pirates are a team that, you know, could surprise a little bit. I don't think they win this conference by any means, but I do like them over their season win total here. I had them projected for about 6.5 wins. I think the Pirates get back to a bowl game this season.
Pirates, we're loving all things Carolina right now. Well, except for maybe South Carolina, but that's neither here nor there. That is one other win total you can check out in the guide for Adam Burke. As far as the power ratings go, you were talking about, you know, you have an article. It's really, really good. How to create your own power rating model here. I'm not sure where most people would have Alabama starting the year, but they cracked the top five for you. And it's one of those situations where with the new Power Four, right? Rich gets richer. You have three of the top five out of the SEC, that new look SEC, and then two, which the fascinating battle will be in the Big Ten, Ohio State versus Oregon this year.
Yeah, and that Ohio State-Oregon game on October 12th in Eugene, I think that's the one that decides the conference here for this season. But as you mentioned, you know, three teams from the SEC in my top five. You know, and I got five in the top eight with LSU and Ole Miss also in the mix as well. And Ole Miss is a team I'm excited to see. There's a lot of hype about the Rebels year in and year out, but a lot of people think this may be the year, based on what they did in the transfer portal, that they actually live up to those expectations. So, yeah, it's just a very basic set of what I call positional power ratings, but I think it is something that will help you kind of gauge, get a value for these teams and a value for some of these lines as we go throughout the course of the year.
Great stuff, man. We'll see you tomorrow. Bright and early. Excited. College Football Betting Guide release show. I know Michael's excited. You're going to read all 212 pages tomorrow morning, Michael.
I love it. Yeah, I do. I love it. I'm going to read the Mac five times, I can tell you that.
Let's do it. And don't forget to check out the Sun Belt for one Adam Burke's breakdown. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, talk a little Why Not Wednesday with some long shot bets after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, Adam Burke, in addition to handling all things college football betting guide, he has a full breakdown on the Hall of Fame game for tomorrow. Steve Mackinnon also has more on the Hall of Fame game as far as all the historical trends as the preseason gets underway tomorrow. Michael Lombardi has his burning questions as well for all AFC teams. That's along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Optimized for mobile, all at VSiN.com.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Why Not Wednesday? Let's do it, Mike. We got a lot of good topics for today, including the game that is about to start here in 15 minutes from the Olympics. We're both excited to watch as soon as we get off the air here. The U.S. Gets the rematch against South Sudan. If you missed that in the exhibition tune-up, USA is a 43.5-point favorite, down double digits at halftime. I certainly did not cover that game. They came back. They win by 1 point. South Sudan had a good look at the buzzer. South Sudan is 22-1 against Team USA. Now, that certainly is a definition of just a why not Wednesday for today. I'll say this, though. A lot of respected money coming in on South Sudan plus the points, which you can get plus 30 right now. And I actually don't think that's a bad bet whatsoever. South Sudan clearly is not what the expectations were when they had that exhibition against the USA.
Well, the one thing is when you get surprised by a team and survive, the next time you play them, you're not surprised. So I fully expect Team USA to have a complete concentration to play this game. And look, it's hard for great teams to stay great all the time when they know they're 40-point favorites against another team. So the second time you play them, they'll take this a lot more seriously. I agree with you, perhaps take the points, because South Sudan also has confidence that they can play with these guys. So I think, to me, the line would be better, but for to think South Sudan's going to beat our team, no. You couldn't get me to say why not on that.
I know. Well, and it's part of it, too, is like purely from a betting numbers perspective. The 43.5, like, let's just be real, Michael. That was just a guess. You know, the originators of which, yeah, there are very few on Olympic exhibition basketball, they're just taking their best stab at it. You can't risk putting it too low because you know you're going to get an influx of likely homeristic USA money. But to say, oh, well, now they reduced it 14, 15 points means value's on USA, that is a total farce. To me, value's still on South Sudan. Not that they're going to win the game. They won't. But to at least keep it within 30, that's the way I would bet that thing for the game starting here in about 15 minutes there. Prime time in France at the Olympics as the group stage rolls on. All right, why not Wednesday? We got a lot of long shots here as far as some season-long futures. We broke down the Bears today. Michael, Caleb Williams, 40-plus passing touchdowns in the regular season at 16-1. I'll take a pass on that. How about you?
You're not getting me to say why not on that. 40, look, we're, you know, I'm not sure Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Chicago Bears, does he look at the weather reports in Chicago?
Yeah.
Does he realize it's called the Windy City? Like, you know, if you're going to win in Chicago and you're playing 9 games or 8 games there, with 5 of them are going to be wind, rain, snow, sleet, hail, whatever you want to, like, you got to have a big physical team that can pound it. I mean, that's what football's about. Football, it does take weather into play. And we have entered into the Madden world where we all just want to play it on our computers and it's perfect conditions. But look, the Caleb Williams won't throw 40 touchdown passes, I don't think, in his career. He shouldn't. He needs to hand the ball off. He needs to make plays. 40, if you're playing 17 games, you've got to average over 2 a game.
I'm with you. Get that out of here. You know what? I could potentially get behind this. And we talked when we broke down the Texans earlier, Michael. How will the offense look? Will be a little bit more multidimensional, a little more balanced for Bobby Slowick as an OC. There's a path where it's not balanced, and you have C.J. Stroud playing indoors, and you could throw the football a lot for him to reach 5,000 pass yards. That is plus 750. Now, I mean, the issue is I'd want double digits on that, but if you're getting me into the why not mode, I can see a world in which Stroud gets there, where Slowick to revert back to some of the tendencies of last year, and you just see a whole lot of deep bombs from Stroud this year.
I think they bluffed everybody with having a hand that thought they could run the ball. They couldn't run the ball. I think the bluff's off. I think now people are going to approach Houston as a passing team, not a running team. And all those play action stuff, which we see the adjustments that teams made in the second half against them. Remember, this is a team that struggled in the first and third quarters. They really improved in the second and fourth. I don't see Stroud. I know Nico Collins is good. The line moved when they signed Diggs, which I don't understand why that moved the line from 8.5 to 9.5 on the win total. But I don't see them. If they're going to win the South, he can't throw for 5,000 yards.
And look, even in a situation last year where he was throwing a lot, 41.08 in 2023 for Stroud. I mean, that's why I would need double digits to actually want to pull the trigger on that bet. Here's another really interesting one staying in that division, Michael, with quarterbacks. Anthony Richardson, in his first three starts, 4 rushing touchdowns last year, then the injury early on in week number 4. To reach 12 rushing touchdowns, it's plus 550. You're really banking in, though, a reliance and a trust in his ability to stay on the field, and that's what this really comes down to me.
Well, look, I think to me, you know, one of the things we've seen is Josh Allen's, I think that there were 19 rushing touchdowns in Buffalo last year. Josh Allen had 15 of them. When you get to the red zone and you become a 6-back offense or a 6-point offense like the Colts will do, dealing with the quarterback down there is a problem. Because this, you know, you've got to defend the run. You've got to defend the run option pass. I do think, you know, plus 12 touchdowns is realistic. I could say why not to this, but I think at plus 550, it doesn't seem to be a good enough price to invest in.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, price not, it's not all that great, especially if you think about, you know, you could just bet this, you know, anytime touchdown throughout the regular season. If you're betting any, if you bet anytime touchdown in all 17 games for Richardson, the payout, let's say you know you win 11 and lose 6, the payout's going to be much greater than winning, you know, about 5.5 units on a single bet if you're doing it that way. That's how I would approach that. And that would qualify for me. I mean, it is in the why not category. I am a believer that Richardson will use him properly. He'll be staying healthy here in 2024. Continuing here, why not Wednesday to wrap up the show. This one I saw and I just laughed at. Pittsburgh Steelers to win 12 plus games in the regular season, 8-1. No, thank you on that one.
Yeah, no, I have great respect for Mike, and I think winning 10 games last year was a miracle, but to get to 12, you know, we're already hearing that Justin Fields is edging into Russell Wilson's reps. Now, we know what Fields is going to look like once he becomes, if he starts there, what that offense will look like. For me, I 10 would be a tremendous season. I'm certainly not going to 12.
Like, if you told me, you know, because remember, week one, Pittsburgh plays Atlanta. That's close to a pick 'em the expectations are pretty, power ratings pretty similar on those two teams. Pittsburgh has the toughest strength of schedule in the league. Atlanta has the easiest, plays in probably the weakest division in the league. If you told me 12 plus wins for Atlanta at similar odds, I would probably say why not, just because even though I don't believe in them, the schedule is to the point where I could see a world in which that happens. I don't see it in any way with Pittsburgh with the gauntlet they have to face, even if they do exceed expectations as far as the product on the field here for 2024. A few more for us to get to here. We'll go to the AFC North. Ja'Marr Chase still waiting his extension to record a 200 plus receiving yard game at any point is plus 370 this year. Is that enticing enough for you, Michael, on those odds?
You know, I think you got to certainly, Ja'Marr Chase can go off at any moment. One slant for a touchdown, 2 slants, and he's over. I would make that to that at plus 370. Not a, you know, it's a good number. I would take that bet. I would make that one.
Because again, you're not talking every game. It's just one time for Chase. Especially, you assume at a certain point, Burrow will be fully healthy, despite the early negative reports we've seen in training camp. All right, Ravens to score one or more rushing touchdown in every regular season game. Now, 10-1 makes, that's a lot of sense. That was the other one I looked at, and I would say, yeah, why not? That's a team that has been predicated on, you talk about the red zone productivity, Michael, on running the ball into the end zone. I could very well see that happening.
I think so. I mean, I would definitely play that at 10-1 because I think that's who they are. They get down there, you know, they're going to throw it. But he's also has the ability to make plays with his feet. Again, it's a 6-back offense when he gets down there because of his movement. So, yeah, rushing TDs would count here for me. I would bet that.
26 rushing touchdowns last year to 27 passing touchdowns. Most teams do not have that even of a split. I do like that for Baltimore. Here's one that will be in the account. If you shop this, you can find it at circa 11-1. The Giants to have the fewest wins in the NFL. This is, of all these, my favorite here. This is more than why not. This is I am in on fading the Giants to the extreme in 2024, Michael.
Yeah, and this is without counting any injuries, right? This is with the Giants team on paper, even as much as they celebrated with their draft and all the success they had. I mean, look, you watch that Giants Hard Knocks, you think this is a team competing for the Super Bowl. And yes, I would agree with a why not here.
All right. We found some good ones on Why Not Wednesday. There will be more for us. There's a couple of dual forecast divisional stuff we're going to do next week that I've kind of circled already. So I'm already looking forward to the Why Not Wednesday edition for next week. Michael, great to be with you as always. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks,
excited
Dan.
For the first day of August. Preseason football gets underway tomorrow. And, of course, the College Football Betting Guide. Stay tuned for all of that coverage here coming up. On the other side on VSiN, it is Sharp Money as the day rolls on here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.